There, Wild One. Welcome back to Wildly Intentional. This summer, we made a little pilgrimage to the Laura Ingalls Wilder homestead sites, most recently to the banks of Plum Creek in Minnesota and Pepin, Wisconsin. And as I stood there watching my kids run through the prairie grass, touching the same soil that Laura Ingalls once did, I realized something. Reading the books is one thing, but living them, even in small, simple ways, makes the stories unforgettable. Today, we're heading into the known with a reflection on how stories shape the way we live. This one's especially for the wild blends who love mixing tradition with imagination and finding wonder in unlikely places. It's also for the rooted seekers longing for rhythms that feel anchored and true, and for the curious unlearners ready to step outside the grind of productivity and rediscover a slower, more human pace. So whether you're raising kids, sharing life with your grandkids, or simply craving more meaning in your own days, this conversation is for you. Reclaim your rhythm. Rethink the rules. Rewrite your life. This is Wildly Intentional, the show where we question the scripts we've inherited and build a life, family, and legacy on purpose. If you're done living on autopilot, come with a curious mind and a courageous heart. Here, we talk about what it means to question, unlearn, create, and build what truly matters. I'm your host, Mandy, maverick mom of three, maker, family culture builder, lifelong question asker, and the friend people call when they're ready to rethink, well, everything. I'm here to shake the norms, tell the truth, and light the way forward. If you're new here, welcome. I'm so glad you found this space. If someone shared this episode with you, it's probably because they see the same hunger in you to make learning more human, more rooted, and more alive. I hope you'll feel at home here. And if you've been with me for a while, thank you. Before we dive in, just a quick note. Wildly Intentional is made in the quiet hours, before sunrise or well after bedtime, with heart, hope, and a big mug of coffee by my side. If this space resonates with you and you'd like to help offset the cost of production, you can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/wildlyintentional. Every bit helps to keep the mic on and the mission moving. The link is in the show notes. Okay, let me give you a glimpse of what the summer looked like for us. It was simple and ordinary moments that turned into some pretty unforgettable lessons. Take butter making, for example. We shook cream in a mason jar until our arms were sore. Then we kind of gave up and put it in the Vitamix. My daughter sighed, "That was hard work." And I just laughed because Laura Ingalls would have thought that was the easy version. Making butter with your kids isn't teaching them to prepare for doomsday. It's about tasting slowness, effort, and joy. We've braided rugs from old t-shirts, and we've talked about how Laura's family wasted nothing. We've sewn rag dolls, including a little Charlotte doll. We've drawn our own paper dolls in the shirts and dresses and all the accessories. And we made corn cob dolls too, realizing that play looked different for Laura, but it's always mattered for children of all ages and generations. We've snacked on apples, cider, and popcorn while reading chapters of Farmer Boy. And those simple foods became memory makers that tied senses to the story. One night, after we'd finished our popcorn, my son suddenly exclaimed, "We forgot to dip it in milk like Almanzo. Can we try that, Mom?" And just like that, the story spilled right into my kitchen. We started laying out the fabric for a 9-patch quilt, and it's teaching us slowness, patience, and the beauty of repetition. And we're still leaning in, planning things like a woodworking project, a loom project, and even a trip to a living history farm. Because this Laura Ingalls Wilder unit isn't one we're going to just check off. It's a way of embodying the stories, letting our kids enter the world of Laura Ingalls in real ways. They feel the rhythm of how Laura worked, how she played, the foods that she ate and described. The books are becoming more than just words. They're becoming precious memories, tastes, and laughs. And I'm not just trying to speak about Little House books. We try to make all kinds of books memorable in simple, hands-on ways. When we finished Heartwood Hotel, we baked a strawberry wedding cake for Mrs. Prickles and Mr. Quilson. Stories have sparked tea parties with donuts for Alice in Wonderland and robot building sessions after the Wild Robot series, and even candy store adventures after reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and a whole week of Matilda, reading the book, watching both versions of the movie, and singing along with the soundtrack. So when a book has a movie, like many of the ones I just mentioned, or the BFG, or even the one and only Ivan, we turn it into a movie night, and then we talk about what was similar, what was different, and what version we liked the best. We've even gone to see live performances of Frog and Toad and Alice in Wonderland. After we read the picture book Lentil, we tried learning the harmonica, and we even did some whittling. So no matter the story, we're sometimes doing things with food, sometimes it's a craft, sometimes it's just a conversation, but all of it makes the story stick in a way that a worksheet never could. And this is really the other side of what we talked about back in episode 4, about curating a home library that reflects your family's heart. Choosing what's on the shelf matters, but the next step is letting those stories jump off the shelf and into your life. This summer, my daughter dove into the Judy Moody series. If you know Judy, you know she's full of projects and adventures. So inspired by her, my daughter started a scrapbook of her own, No Bummer Summer. And she even began a little me collage, just like Judy. She likes Judy and her little brother Stink so much, she started reading the Stink series to my son. And now they are doing things inspired by those books, like making comics and slime together. And that's when it started to hit me. Whether it's Prairie Life or a spunky third grader, the books that our kids love, they don't just shape their imaginations. They shape how they live their days. That's what made this summer feel so full and so beautifully slow. We weren't rushing from activity to activity. We were living inside stories. Maybe you don't have the space right now for road trips or rag rugs. Maybe your kids are in school all day, or they'd rather play Minecraft than read Little House. That's okay. Because the point isn't what book or how you do it. The point is this. Stories shape us in ways that screens never can. So whether it's a picture book at bedtime, a comic in the car, or even just talking about a movie together, it all counts. Reading aloud isn't about checking a box. It's about connection. About raising kids who know that stories matter. Even in the moments when I caught myself scrolling social media, wondering if we were doing enough this summer, I knew in the back of my mind, our summer wasn't looking like endless camps or a packed calendar. It was reading in hammocks, tending to our garden, canning tomatoes, watching my daughter learn how to make a fruit crisp on her own. Hours and hours and hours of free play with no agenda. A few water parks and amusement parks sprinkled in for fun. And of course, our road trips to the Laura Ingalls Wilder homesteads. In episode 11, I shared about saying yes to a slow summer, choosing less, letting the season set our pace. These story projects were a huge part of that. They gave us a rhythm of curiosity without the pressure of a packed calendar. Slower didn't mean less. The slowness gave us space to let the books spill out into our real lives. That's what made it feel full, not busy, but anchored. And that same slowness showed up in our travels too. When we drive, we don't barrel through to the destination. We stop every 2 hours or so, whether it's at a small town bookstore, a random historic marker, or just a park to stretch our legs for a hike. And honestly, those pauses end up being the anchor points of the whole trip. Because the pauses are the point. That's where the learning happens. Pauses create space, not just for memories, but for conversations you wouldn't have otherwise. We took the road trip to the Little House site in Minnesota with a friend. And on that trip, she turned to me and she asked, "Do you think we'll ever go back to times like these, where these kinds of skills aren't just fun projects, but they're actual survival?" And that question stopped me. Because the truth is, maybe. History shows that societies rise and fall. And the people who endure are often the ones you can plant, build, mend, and make. There's a resilience in simple skills that never really expires. But I think the other possibility is just as real, that we end up in something that looks more like WALL-E, hyper-convenient, hyper-connected, but also disconnected. People glued to their screens, dependent on algorithms and AI to think for them, care for them, and even decide for them. Comfortable, but numb. Surrounded by tools, but without the muscle memory of being a human. And that's why I don't think the point of doing these Little House projects is predicting which future we're heading for. The point is practicing now. Practicing presence. Practicing curiosity. Practicing what it means to use our hands, to taste our food, to share our work, to live stories instead of just scrolling through them. Practicing what it means to be human together. To remember that our time matters and our presence matters. Because whether the future looks more like a prairie or like WALL-E's spaceship, our kids will need to remember what it feels like to be human, to belong to each other, to create instead of just consume, to imagine instead of just accept. That's why we read the books. That's why we're learning to sew 9-patch quilts, bake cakes, and that's why we figured out how to make butter. Out of trust that the skills that we're trying now are planting seeds our kids will carry, no matter what the world looks like in 50 years. Maybe you're listening to me right now and you're thinking, yes, that all sounds great, Mandy, but we're not a homeschool family. Or my kids are not that into reading. Or honestly, I've never been the type to curl up with a chapter book and want to read aloud. Here's the truth, my friends. It doesn't matter where your kids go to school, whether you're raising boys or girls, or if they already know how to read on their own. Reading aloud matters. Why? Let's talk about it. Because the stories read aloud do something that screens never can. They slow us down. They give us a shared world, a shared language. They build family culture in a way that worksheets, apps, or even independent reading sometimes can't. If you've never picked up Jim Trelease's Read Aloud Handbook, it is a gem. He makes his stories, research, and practical advice to show why reading aloud matters, not just for little ones, but even after kids can read on their own. It's packed with tips for reluctant readers, choosing the right books, and weaving read aloud time into family life. And best of all, at the back, he has an updated treasury of recommended read alouds, and he gives you hundreds of age-appropriate ideas, from wordless picture books to novels, so you'll never wonder what you should read next. And the research backs all this up. Kids who are read to, even long after they can read for themselves, develop stronger vocabularies, deeper comprehension, and a lasting love of books. But beyond the studies, let me tell you what I've seen in my own home. Reading aloud creates connection. It's not just about teaching. It's about belonging. It's not about drilling comprehension questions. It's about laughing together or gasping at the same twist. So if you've never tried reading aloud before, it's been a while since you've picked up a book and read to your kids, I want to encourage you to start small. Pick one book. Read a chapter after dinner or before bed. Wiggles? Aloud. Legos on the floor? Aloud. You don't want to start by doing that? Pick an audiobook. Play it in the car. That counts too. Then find one simple way to make it come alive. It could be something like eating a snack mentioned in the story, listening to music from that time period, reading in a fun new spot, or visiting a nearby place that echoes the setting of the book. And if your child latches onto one tiny detail, follow it. That spark is where the real learning happens. Because raising readers isn't about checking off a book list. It's about giving your kids the gift of the story. The reminder that words have weight, that imagination is powerful, and that our time together matters. So I want you to remember, because this can be so easy to forget, reading aloud matters even after kids can read on their own. In fact, it might matter more then. Think about how much we, as adults, love listening to podcasts or audiobooks. And take you, for example. You're listening to me right now. Thank you, friend. There's something about the cadence of a human voice, the shared listening experience, the way that stories unfold in real time. If you enjoy that, imagine how much kids, whose imaginations are even more elastic than ours, benefit from being read to. Even for me, audiobooks have become part of my mowing rhythm. I'm on a mower for 3 to 5 hours a week, and the books keep me company as I work. They remind me that stories were never meant to stay on the page. They were always meant to move with us, to keep us company in the ordinary rhythms of life. And I was also reminded of this recently when I had the chance to narrate an audiobook. Spending hours speaking someone else's words out loud showed me just how much voice and cadence shape the way that we experience a story. And I will be sharing more of that conversation soon because the author will be joining me here on the podcast in an upcoming episode. And really, none of this is new at all. For most of human history, stories weren't written down. They were spoken, sung, and shared around fires and tables. Oral storytelling was how wisdom, history, and identity were passed from one generation to the next. So when we read aloud to our kids, or even when we're listening to a podcast or an audiobook, while mowing, cooking, or folding laundry, we're tapping back into that ancient rhythm. We're reminding ourselves that stories were meant to be heard in community, not just consumed in isolation. It's ancestral wisdom showing up in our modern life. Whether it's a folk tale told centuries ago, or a chapter book at bedtime, or even a podcast in your earbuds while you're folding laundry, it's all the same practice. Stories spoken aloud connect us, shape us, and remind us of who we are. And then I got more research to back this up. According to the Scholastic Kids and Family Reading Report, 87% of kids ages 6 to 17 say they love being read aloud to because it's a special time with their parents. That same report found that the number one predictor of kids becoming frequent readers is being read to early and often. Studies from the American Academy of Pediatrics show that reading aloud builds not only vocabulary and comprehension, but also empathy and social emotional skills. So here's a piece that I just really love. We're not just talking about academic outcomes here. We're talking about connection. When we read aloud, we share a world. We laugh at the same moments. We at the same twist. We cry at the same ending. That's bonding. And honestly, their little wiggles don't ruin that. Sometimes the best read-alouds happen while kids are sprawled on the floor, building Lego or doodling, or when you've got dinner simmering on the stove and you're reading with one hand and stirring with the other. It all counts. Car rides can become story times. Bedtimes can become listening times. Reading aloud doesn't have to mean everyone sitting still in a circle. It just means letting a story wash over you together. Because raising readers isn't only about teaching kids to decode words. It's about teaching them to love words, to love rhythm, to love story, to love being swept away into another world. And the ripple effects are huge. Kids who are read to are more likely to read for pleasure as adults. Reading for pleasure is linked to stronger mental health, more resilience, and even higher life satisfaction. So, in a screen-saturated culture, books are inviting kids to build focus, imagination, and empathy, the very skills screens erode. So my friend, the next time you pick up a book and you read it aloud, even just one chapter, you're not only passing on literacy, you're passing on belonging, attention, imagination, and joy. That's why reading aloud still matters. So whether you're raising toddlers, middle schoolers, or even teens, don't underestimate the power of reading aloud. It is one of the simplest, cheapest, most intentional ways to anchor your family in something that lasts. Because learning doesn't have to mean worksheets or strict schedules. Sometimes the best back-to-school supply isn't a new planner or sharpened pencils. It's time. Time to let stories breathe, to let them spill off the page and into your real life. I'm not trying to give you pressure or tell you to do Pinterest perfect projects, just encouraging you to anchor learning in lived experience. And I'm not only talking to parents. Grandparents, maybe for you, it's sharing a story that you loved as a child with your grandkids, or reading something new together and making a memory out of it. And if you don't have kids in your life right now, this still applies. Pick one book for yourself and find one way to let it come alive. Try a recipe, take a walk in a place that reminds you of the story, or share what you're reading with a friend. Because stories don't just shape children, they shape all of us. As the proverb says, I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand. Standing there, watching my kids run through the prairie grass at Plum Creek, hearing them gasp at how Laura treasured a peppermint stick and a penny for Christmas, or how they were expected to be seen and not heard, I realized something. These are the days. The days that I'll remember. And I hope that they will too. Because when we read, when we create, and then when we step into the story with our own hands and feet, it sticks. Maybe that's the real gift. Not just passing down books, but giving our kids memories that live inside those stories. Stories that are rooting them, shaping them, and reminding them who they are becoming. If today sparks something for you, you might also love episode 4, where I talk with Sarah from A Sweet and Simple Home about curating a meaningful home library. And episode 11 is all about saying yes to a slow summer. Because honestly, living inside these stories was one of the ways we did exactly that. Those episodes and today's episode form a bigger thread. Choose the right stories, live them deeply, and let them shape the rhythms of your family. If you still don't know where to start, I would encourage you to check out a website called Read Aloud Revival. Sarah McKinsey is amazing, and she has so many great recommendations. Next week, we're going to zoom out. If today was about what learning can look like in our homes, next week is about why so many families are choosing to step off the conveyor belt. I'll be talking about the school-to-worker pipeline and what it looks like to imagine something different. Thanks so much for listening today. If this episode inspired you, I'd love to hear what book you're bringing to life this fall. You can share it with me on Instagram message, Facebook message, or drop me a line on my website, wildlyintentional.com. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode. And until then, remember, stories are meant to be lived, not just read. Until next time, my friends, stay rooted, be brave, and live wildly intentional.